Beyond Us and Them, podcast on radicalization in the times of social polarization. Welcome in the podcast of Resilience Against Radicalization Through Democratic Education Project. Today we have with us Dr. Łukasz Jurczyszyn, who is a director of Polish Institute of International Affairs office in Brussels. He is a political scientist, sociologist, and holds a PhD from CNRS University in Paris. He was also a national coordinator of the European Commission research project named DARE, what stands for Dialogue About Radicalization and Equality, dedicated to counter-radicalization and terrorism policies in the EU. He is also an expert of the European Commission Center of Excellence of the Radicalization Awareness Network, as well as an expert in anti-terrorism and the radicalization of NATO. Please correct me if I'm wrong or if I missed any of your affiliations.
Everything is correct.
It's really great to that you are with us. So for the beginning, if we may try to maybe set a scene or describe the topic on which we will be focusing in our podcast, which is in general, social radicalization process. So what does it mean? What is it? Because, I mean, in public discourse, quite often people are saying, commentators, journalists, that something is radical, yeah, or somebody is radical. But we know that it's not so obvious that we know that we rather want to narrow down a bit this understanding of this phenomena. So if you can explain us what does it mean, how it manifests itself, maybe if it is related to any a bit broader trends, events, whatsoever. I mean, you are an expert.
Thank you, Philip, one more time for the invitation. I'm very glad that I can take part in this conversation and in frame of your project, especially when you are defining radicalization from the societal angle. And I think it's really crucial that my researchers from, I don't know, since 2004 and 5, so it's been a long time, I think that radicalization and the thing I'm doing now mostly, recruitment to terrorism, are processes inherently social in nature. So I'm glad that we are focusing on that level. In general, like in social sciences, we have plenty of definitions of radicalization process, which is very complex. But I would go for the definition that we agreed in this European Commission project. I think it's quite precise, I would say, that comply this very complex issue. So the process of developing either ideologies or beliefs, behaviors, interactions, and also contexts that can be a precursor to extreme violence. Centrifugal also up to the terrorism. So it's very important when we are speaking together. In my whole professional life, I was focusing on the radicalization process that leads to the violence, to the extreme violence, to the physical violence. But of course, we need to understand that there is a radicalization process that doesn't have to lead to violence. But in the same time, we also need to understand that even this nonviolent extremism can be very dangerous, yeah, for the societies, for the social cohesion, for the education of the and socialization of the new generation of our citizens. So this distinction is important, but of course there are many overlaps. So I'm happy that we are talking about societal part of radicalization, because we need to understand that all this reflection, in fact, started from 9/11. You know, all this reflection of the roots of the terrorist attacks, which was 2011 after other attacks, 2004 in Madrid, 2005. And it was always from the beginning as a new field of studies, radicalization studies. It was linked to the terrorism, but in my opinion, it's a trap also. So of course I'm doing this connection and I'm analyzing this connection, but it's more vast processes, which is not only linked to the terrorism. As I mentioned, social cohesion, as I mentioned, other processes linked to the social inequalities, other divisions, polarization in our societies. So it's important not to frame yourself in the terrorist studies. And I think that we've been moving since that period in a good direction, which leads us to understanding, to better understanding of this phenomenon, in the sense that, you know, for instance, all these attempts to profile terrorists, you know, they have been failed, we can say it today, resoundingly. We now more stick to the pathways, analyzing the whole societies or countries, but individuals in their subjective levels. We more focus on pathways because there are different pathways to become radicalized. And also, as I mentioned in the beginning, there are different ideologies, religious, profiles of radicalized individuals, but also we focus on the milieus, on the communities, on different spheres when these processes can be developed. And this is of course very related to the social environments, the neighborhoods, to the families, to the different institutions and different areas. So this is, we moved from the profiles of dangerous individuals up to the more vaster, bigger societal phenomena. Mm-hmm. So if we look at the place where we are with the, and I will finish with this scientific discourse, but
yeah, sure.
If we think about how we study this phenomenon, I think that we also moved from studies that, as I said before, focus on the profiles, psychological profiles, for instance, but they were very conceptual. And now we've been leading more and more, and I think it's a very good direction, empirical studies and their studies that you mentioned. This project led for the European Commission. It was one of the biggest empirical studies ever. Mm-hmm. Now it's I think it's not, but we are more and more empirical. But in that time, a couple of years ago, it was, and I think you need to study this phenomenon close to the field, not only in trying to understand how people and how societies become radicalized, but also how to counter it. You need to work closely with social workers, with all the people, all the families that are dealing with this issue. So I'm glad to see that many anthropologists, you know, ethnographs, sociologists, they all together work with political scientists to in order to better understand this, mm-hmm. This current trends that you are asking.
Łukasz, if I can interrupt you, because we will get to the answers as well, also discussing the social workers, because this is the group that we are also focusing at in our project. But firstly, maybe if you could help us to understand a bit better this, basing on the results of the research that you just mentioned. Do we know already what are those general factors that make people to become socially radicalized? Can we distinguish them, something like that? Do we know that? What circumstances need to occur?
Yeah, one the most important factor. It's linked to the internal level in our societies, mainly in European societies. When you look at the two types of radicalization that are the most occurrent here, so Islamist radicalization and far-right radicalization. We were focused on those two types, but as I mentioned in the beginning, you cannot close yourself only to several types of radicalization. It's very dynamic. You need to look at it very, very closely. But if you look at these two types, you can see that, you have Islamist groups that are interfering our Western, let's call it, European societies from abroad, I think here about terrorist organizations that even now they are strong, but of course they were stronger a couple of years ago, like such organizations like Al-Qaeda or Islamic State. But what is important, this recruitment, which is done via internet, via online means, is of course one of the way how people, younger generation of citizens of very precise countries, I would say, that have mostly the problem with Islamist radicalization, like France, like Germany, like Great Britain, or the Netherlands, or Spain. There are a couple of them that they are really dealing with this problem mostly. But of course, there is this other part, extreme right, far right, nationalist extremism, which is present in other parts of the European region, like in the central or eastern part. But what is important to understand, and that was one of our main results, you cannot only contend yourself and divide such two types of mm-hmm. important radicalization trends, of course. Also, they interact with each other. So mm-hmm. when there are more terrorist acts made by Islamist organization, terrorist organization, you have more and more far-right activities mm-hmm. and vice versa. If you have more racist attacks, more Islamophobic tendencies, there are parts of Muslim communities, societies in Europe, namely, that become more and more radicalized, you know, like the opposition of this threat. Mm-hmm. So these different types of radicalization, they can be cumulative, they can interact with each other. And the same case we have with the far right and far left, which I also studied in such countries like Russia or France. And this cumulative radicalization of different types also is going on now in Europe. So you have precise organizations, groups, far right or Islamist, that they are the leaders of this radicalization process. They recruit younger generation, they influence societies, but also there are the reasons why this part of our societies, our citizens, they become radicalized. And of course, one of the main cause is there are social inequalities. That mm-hmm. is something we really focus on in our research, not only in my study, which was focused on the types of different programs or strategies, policies that they mm-hmm. they've been producing to counter radicalization, to prevent radicalization, and to counter terrorism as well. But also, we studied more than 140 studies, texts, analyses, which were trying to explain this link between radicalization and social inequalities. And of course, we observed many observations in the field, because we interviewed in that project, namely around 500 individuals, which were either radicalized already from the Islamist part or from from the far right tendencies or groups, but also in Europe mostly, mm-hmm. but not only. We also studied Tunisian society. We did our research in Turkey, in Russia, mm-hmm. but mainly in Europe. And when you look at at our results, you can see that it's not there's a no direct link between social socioeconomical really, I would say, inequalities and the path to the violent extremism. But there is a link in the sense that which is linked to the subjective mm-hmm. the feeling of subjective inequality. So people who feel that they are not equal from the social and political also sense, they can go to the path of radicalization process. And this is, on the one hand, how they look our how does it look our state of understanding of this process. But also this is something I would say positive, mm-hmm. that it's not, there is not direct link between economical inequalities, which cannot be resolved in a short term or mm-hmm. even in the middle term. They will stay with us for dozens of years, maybe forever. So, but the point is to start now, and many programs, more than 90% of our programs that we study, they tackle this long-term societal inequalities. And this is a good thing to know that thanks to these programs, when you work with marginalized individuals or groups, you can help them to minimize their perception of the situation, at least, especially at the political level, and that can help to work against this radicalization processes. Yeah. So this mm-hmm. is something I would say positive in the whole. In this worrying situation. And the other thing is, of course, there are external factors. I mentioned just one part of the problem. Mm-hmm. So very practically, foreign fighters, the Europeans, around 5,000 that were involved in this Islamist revolution, violent revolution in the Middle East, in Africa, who are returning to the European Union. Yeah, so they can represent a threat for the, not only direct threat for the national security, but also for the social cohesion, because they can start the recruitment practices, what I mentioned in the beginning. The other factor linked to this external is linked to the spillover effect. When this external, international, related to the precise country level problems, they become a problem for the European Union societies. And I can give you one example that really mm-hmm. struck me when I was interviewing the chef of the unit in the Manchester area of the anti-terrorist unit. Mm-hmm. He was a policeman since ever. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Person who stayed all his life, 30 years working in the local police headquarters. He was, and he explained it to me, he was for the first time in his professional life forced to deal with international affairs. He had to understand what kind of, not only cultural or social problems come with the migration to his region, but also what kind of political problems. Now he needs to understand better to deal with this new type of citizens and the problems that he was forced to deal with. So this is a spillover effect. We can enlist here the Kurds, we can at least hear the many populations from the Arab states, so differently culturally and and also from Central Asia and Caucasus. So this is a new situation, not only for the societies themselves, but also, of course, for the all the system that is designed to counter radicalization. So this is maybe there are two main trends that we can notice currently, and the other crime nexus, radicalization. So this is the third I would mention, like the most important. It means that in our societies, in the liberty, I would say, people who are living in this so-called difficult neighborhoods, ghettos. So we have this ghettoization process, which is very important in various of European countries, like France or the Netherlands. You have the rise of criminality. You have the closed societies where not only these recruiters can operate very, very, very easily, but also there is a lack of belief in the system, lack of belief in the values of the majority of the society. So it's quite easy for the recruiters to galvanize and to convince youngsters to mobilize themselves in this terrorist organization. But it's not only that. Yeah, it's like there's the states, our European values, let's call it like that, linked to the democracy and the tolerance. They're losing with in these areas where there is no job, where you have 60% of unemployment, even 70% of unemployment. There's a black market everywhere, and there's a rise of criminality, problem with drugs, etc., etc. And in these areas, people who the small delinquents, the small criminals, they more and more often became radicalized persons. And the same for the Islamist radicalization or far right. So this is one thing. And the second thing, it's the prisons, especially in the Western European countries, and became, I told you about the importance to study the milieus, the particular milieus, like neighborhoods, particular ghettos, particular milieu groups, and the prisons, one of the key milieu, I would say, that today the radicalization process, and in particular Islamists in Western societies, has been developing for a couple of years. That's why you will ask me, I think, soon about the means how to counter this, this different types of radicalization process. So one of the policies that they are most reflective, innovative, namely they focus on the prisons.
Before we'll go to discussing the answers, I wanted to ask you one more thing regarding the phenomena itself, because as you said, definitely we are observing that this issue, this topic, its importance is growing for some years. I mean, you said that it started with this main terrorist attacks with September 11 and then the following ones. Could we say that the social radicalization of today has some different nature that it had before, or I mean, it's rather constant, or I mean, are there any features and any factors that are changing its nature? I was just wondering if maybe you can say something about that as well.
I mean, for sure, as I mentioned in the beginning, we need to stop being stereotypical and thinking stereotypical about the types of radicalization. So we have this classical, traditional types. Islamists, far right, far left. We have the new phenomena I described it in the beginning, this cumulative radicalization. So how these different types can interact with each other. But after you have a new rising phenomena, as I also mentioned, this crime nexus radicalization. So this link very worrying between the criminal individuals and criminalized groups that operate and they switch to political violence and political radicalization process. And of course it's linked with this recruitment policies and strategies of precise radicalized terrorist organizations. But I would say one of the other, and this is not also maybe very new, yeah, because we, when we look at the history of not radicalization process, but radicalism in our societies, which is another phenomenon, not directly linked to the violence, to the political violence, political radicalism, for instance. We look that many individuals with the psychiatric problems, they can very easily, and they do it because of the role of mass media, because of the internet, they can use this political cause in recourse to the violence, to the direct extreme violence. They can become terrorists, they can become dangerous for the national security, using actual political and religious contexts. So because of the specific natures of precise countries' radicalizations, like in the United States, there is a huge problem with the shootings. Yeah. So we like in France or in England currently, there is this huge problem with the crimes committed with knives in the public sphere, on the streets. So you have these individuals formerly were more hidden. Yeah? Today they use this actual current political religious context in recursing to violence. So if you look at the different terrorist acts like in Munich in Germany recently, after they leave some manifesto which is linked to some traditional, political radicalism, they appear to be Marxists or anti-capitalists, or they want to copy some famous terrorists like André Breivik, Norwegian, and these are people with some mental problems. And of course, it's important not to do this link, natural link between people with mental problems and radicalization and terrorism. But we can notice that we need to take into account this current tendency, which is more and more present. And after, when you're asking me about the current trends, which are different from the past, it's of course the problem of the polarization of our societies, mm-hmm. Which are skyrocketing because of the internet and mm-hmm. the information bubbles and maybe even now, which is more and more problematic when you have a pandemic moment and people are close in the flats and homes, they're using this, they live in this internet environment more often than before. So I think this, apart from the recruitment processes from the terrorist organization, I'm talking about the social polarization of our societies that can lead to the phenomenon that we can observe in the field when this radical ideologies or beliefs, they can very easily influence, especially younger part of our generations, thanks to the internet. It's a very tricky thing because internet, we cannot only limit our reflection to the internet. The same in designing the policies that are aimed to counter radicalization process. I hope to return to this point, but it's clear that the impact is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Let's get to this topic of the policies aiming to counteract social radicalization. I mean, if you can explain or name a few of them that you were able to analyze in your research, and especially those that you find effective, answering to the needs, to the problems that you have been just describing to us.
Yeah, so basing on these 100 policies that we studied. Yeah.
Okay,
we
can focus on a few. Yeah, we don't have to speak about all of them. Yeah.
but you can see a clear tendency that they more and more they focusing on the community level. So finally, I would say there is this interest in supporting NGOs which are in the field for many years. That we have to deal with a new generation of citizens that they're living in these difficult areas, for instance, these ghettos I was referring to, and this is very very clear that in these policies you can see more and more NGOs that galvanize parents. Mm-hmm. Family members. Mm-hmm. So this is something very, I wouldn't say new, but it's a clear tendency for about 5 years. So we cooperated very closely in our research with the Mothers for Life. So all mothers, they were fathers as well, of youngsters. They went to Middle East from European Union. And this youngster died in Africa or Middle East in the jihad fight. So you can see that these parents they organize themselves and they can be very supportive for the state locally or at the national level. And I met women mothers that either in Belgium or in France they act as experts for the national police. So if they have some inquiries, they have some problem, some questions, of course the police and the states, they have their own experts on counter-radicalization and the counter-terrorist policies. But these parents with so particular experience and I would say sensibility, they can be very helpful to define some beginning of the problem in the families that the police could notice. So you have this cooperation, which is very interesting between police and NGOs, because when we talk about this local level, which is a main tendency, as I said, these fragile societies that we are dealing with today, this living in these difficult neighborhoods, but in general, societies during this polarized world and mm-hmm. polarized tendencies, people, these citizens and these individuals, they don't trust this huge presence of the state in this at this local level. So they can see this secret police. They can see this whole system that is aimed to counter terrorism, and they can see it as a counterproductive. And mm-hmm. and what we can see, it's more effective to count on the organization or association, civil social workers, that the subjects that they have this local trust and social trust from the people, mm-hmm. and not for the state. So this is very important, and we can observe this in our study, that state should and is investing more and more in this social, I would say, structures, additionally to the counter-terrorist, for instance, policy. So in France, according mm-hmm. to this new counter-radicalization policy from the 2018, that was very interesting case, mm-hmm. because the French, they're very experienced, and of course we know why. They have a huge problem with radicalization process, especially Islamist one. So in their regular social policy at the field, at the local sphere, apart from this regular social workers, they are added these more experienced social workers with namely this counter-radicalization or radicalization prevention background. Mm-hmm. So they can notice different things. They specialize in the field, which is a new, and I think it's also a good direction. And the second point, it's evaluation, which is really lacking. You know, in our 100, among our 100 policies, there are only 20% of them which are evaluated. And this is very dangerous trend. We should stop it. And we encourage in our policy papers, in our communication of our results in this project, for instance, we encourage not only European Union, but also member states that they should start evaluating, because we should be more aware which means, which tools they work and which are, they don't work. And when we observe only increasing amount of money pouring in this radicalization prevention sector, mm-hmm. or counter-radicalization and counter-terrorist sector, like in Germany, it's doubled, I don't know, from 100 million to 200 million euros. We're still lacking evaluation tools and means, this external one in particular. So the other main trend, it's returning to the first initial point, that you cannot only treat new generations as the source of the problem, but you need to really practice more dialogue with these new generations, with a new perception of reality, with their new perception of projects for the future of their future and the future of their neighborhoods or states. We should dialogue more with them and to look at them as a source of the solution as well. So in our recommendation, we're really focusing on the one hand, the need for the bank of ideas. There are many good ideas from different countries that there should be more transferred between them. The different states at the local and at the national level, they should be more aware about policies and practices in these strategies and policies and to counter radicalization. Because we cannot all the time invent the wheel, you know, and there are very good ideas. One of the ideas which is more and more present, it's convincing and presenting the shared values, that we have a shared values and we have a shared future together. And we cannot only underline the differences. So in the education about the cultural differences, social differences, countries' differences, there should be also some added value what we share with each other. Mm-hmm. And the other point is the exchange of the experience, because in counterterrorism there's a good connection between the states, I would say. Mm-hmm. If you look at the Europol, we have means, we have institutions, but it's not the case with the radicalization process. There are some important institutions like radicalization awareness network inside the European Commission, of course. And there are 4,000 experts that are galvanized and they share this experience. But it's not shared at the local level in precise countries. And I think it should be, we should be trying to achieve this level, like in counterterrorism, we have this interconnectivity, different approaches. We need to learn from each other and also, of course, learn about some radical groups that they are operating. And of course, in today's world, they circulate between different states, countries, etc. So this is the other, maybe the most important result that we achieved in our research.
As I understand, more can be found on the website of the project, yeah?
Of course.
Yes.
I invite you as well.
Okay, thank you. So maybe just one closing question, and I have to try to ask you if you have any recommendations for our work in our project, because as we are focusing on the social workers. So I was wondering if you can maybe suggest us something, especially on what kind of competences, attitude of social workers we have to focus while preparing them to work on social radicalization or with people that are undergoing social radicalization. Maybe you can recommend us something regarding that.
I mean, very important in my view, it's to gather two levels regarding social media activity, which is, of course, very important in today's work with the younger generation. So I think social workers should be active in social medias with the counter-radicalization discourse. And of course, this should be defined by their superiors. This should be a matter of reflection, the collective reflection inside the structure. Yeah, we need to define in which type of radicalization we are dealing with in this area, you know, in this country. And of course, there are some national level sites like Stop Jihadism in France. So you have a platform when you feed this platform with a counter radicalization discourses. But I think, which is just, so social workers should be aware about these tools and should also look what this younger generation they produce as a counter radicalization content. But I think, and this is what social workers are trained for, they're very strong in the field, in maintaining, in creating the social bands at the local level with the new generations. And unfortunately today with the pandemic, it's maybe more difficult, but I just noticed and really repeatedly in different countries, when social workers and some systems at the local level as well. So it's starting to return to this old school social centers, youth centers, which I think they have a chance to be reinvented and revigorated, I think, because we cannot only stop at the online level. we need to understand better the new generations. And I think that that's the tendency we just notice also in different countries. And I think this tendency should be reinforced, yeah, to work in the real circumstances and to work to strengthen the real social bonds and interactions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Łukasz, thank you very much for all sharing all your knowledge and also especially these recommendations. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. It was a very interesting conversation and I wish you good luck in your project as well. Thank you for inviting
okay.
me.
Thank you very much and also good luck for your work as well. And goodbye.
Bye-bye.